Sing aloud, O daughter Zion. Shout, O Israel. Rejoice and exult with all your heart, O daughter Jerusalem. The Lord has taken away the judgments against you. He has turned away your enemies. The King of Israel, the Lord, is in your midst. You shall fear disaster no more. On that day it shall be said to Jerusalem, do not fear, O Zion. Do not let your hands grow weak. The Lord your God is in your midst, a warrior who gives victory. He will rejoice over you with gladness. He will renew you in his love. He will exult over you with loud singing as on a day of festival. And God says, I will remove disaster from you so that you will not bear reproach for it. I will deal with all your oppressors at that time, and I will save the lame and gather the outcast. And I will change their shame into praise and renown in all the earth. At that time, I will bring you home, at the time when I gather you. For I will make you renowned and praised among all the peoples of the earth when I restore your fortunes before your eyes. Thus says the Lord. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I don't know about you, but I know about me. Most of us don't like interruptions, especially at this time of year. It can be a tough season to navigate. Families come and go. There are gifts to purchase and wrap. There are itineraries to manage, parties to stop by. There are a lot of people trying to squeeze in concert if they can. But with the schedule so tight, who wants a long-lost cousin to knock on the door and walk in without warning? Neither do we really want friends to suddenly appear with long children, runny noses, who are not quite over their stomach bugs or other forms of contamination. That would be an interruption. There are some people in my wider family who live with the assumption that they can manage every part of their lives. And should you show up late, unexpectedly, at a family gathering, they are not pleased. They'll make this known to you. In fact, they find it's an interruption of their carefully calculated schedules, and you may miss seeing them because you missed your allocated half hour to appear. And you become the interruption. And living around here, neither do we want to be interrupted by the weather. When a blip on the map develops into a full-fledged nor'easter, we scowl and begin to rearrange. And if we succeed in rearranging and the nor'easter becomes nothing more than a blip, we're quickly annoyed to have to rearrange our previously rearranged plans. Interruptions. Christmas comes with a long list of habits. In some homes, the tree is acquired and put up on the same day every year. Don't mess with that. The lights are strong after being checked and possibly replaced. The packages are wrapped by December 18th, not in my house, but some places, so that we can have a frenzy-free week before the holiday. The elf goes on the shelf. The star is hung from the front porch. Everything comes out of carefully labeled boxes and will then be returned to the same. This is what a tightly managed Christmas will look like. No interruptions. Thank you. Some people I know have basically thought they had it all figured out. They thought they did. They had just liquidated their daughter's bedroom, having helped her move some distance away. Life was now simplified. Then on Christmas Eve, daughter Diana reappears with a big surprise. She brought Mom and Dad a new puppy, declaring, I felt guilty having left you alone. His name is Chester. He's not quite trained. He's full of life and absolutely charming, but nevertheless an extraordinary interruption. And last time I checked, he still is. So do a quick survey of your spirit. What would be the most intrusive interruption you could possibly face this time of year? Unexpected guest? A gift you don't want? A new puppy? A bad diagnosis? An expected illness of someone you love? Or something else? I raise that because sometimes the interruption breaks a pattern of seasonal negativity. I mean, you don't have to be a Grinch to be worn down by Christmas. There are such long lines, there are distracted drivers on the highway, and the possible wait on the phone to speak with customer service, or just the way that the increasing shadows work on us at this darkest season of the North American year. And then suddenly, bam, something startles us. A situation we've taken for granted is pierced. Maybe it's our perspective on life and times, and then it's suddenly ripped open from somewhere else. So this last Wednesday night, we had about 20 people in the conference room here reading through the book of Zephaniah. For most of us, for all of us, it was the first time. It was hard work. A scary book. Zephaniah was a prophet some 700 years before the time of Jesus. He was one of those gloom and doom prophets that absolutely nobody wants to hear. It's not that he was foretelling the future. That's one of the misconceptions we have about the Old Testament prophets. People think that prophets are merely fortune tellers, but in the Bible it's more accurate to say the prophet is the truth teller. That's why nobody wants to hear them. They speak a word from God that describes all the recurring messes that every generation of God's people find themselves enmeshed in. In the time of Zephaniah, there were plenty of difficulties. The rich were plundering the poor and then blaming the poor for their poverty. The powerful were taking advantage of the weak and trying not to get caught at it. And God bless them, the clergy were spending a lot of their time spewing empty platitudes and enjoying the rich offerings that kept them in comfort. It's the same sorry old situation that every generation must wade through. And for the first 2.5 chapters of Zephaniah's 3 pages of oracles, we hear gloom and doom that the people have come to expect. People have created a lot of messes. They're now accustomed to them, their habits. And as we worked around the room in our Bible study the other night, reviewing the first part of Zephaniah's book, the further we went, it felt like the prophet was deflating all our tires. And then bam, something new breaks through. End of chapter 3, last paragraphs. Sing aloud, O daughter Zion, shout, O Israel, rejoice and exult with all your heart, O daughter Jerusalem. Which at that point was about the last thing anybody in that room wanted to hear, expected to hear. Which was fair because it was the last thing that Zephaniah's people ever expected to hear. They knew about the gloom and the doom. They tasted it. They had swallowed the judgment and the punishment for a long, long time. And then suddenly, everything is interrupted by this call to rejoice. Now, this is no less an intrusion than any other. Ask one of the 20-something families in our congregation who have lost a loved one in the last 12 months. Some of them were expecting not to decorate very much for this Christmas. Some of them just wanted to play it quietly, pull the shades. But just imagine if one day they were to open the mailbox to find 237 Christmas cards calling them to be joyful. They're not expecting that. And to some extent, they really don't want that. Why not just leave them alone? Let them stay in the shadows. I do not make light of this in any way, but the darkness around us is real, the darkness within us is real. But what should happen if light from a source beyond us should puncture the gloom? Just the other day, I phoned somebody to invite them to tomorrow night's Blue Christmas Vespers here in the sanctuary. She turned me down flat. "I'm not ready for that," she said. "I'm not sure if I'll ever be ready for that." The grief is still raw, and the loved one is still grieved. And then we've got this text. And I know why the church has chosen this poem by the prophet Zephaniah. It's happy and it's joyful and it's hopeful. And we think at first glance, okay, he's just telling us how December ought to be. And for some few people, maybe it is. But let's be instructed by how the prophet Zephaniah understands hope. Hope is the interruption. Hope is the unexpected intrusion. Biblically speaking, hope is not a wish. It is not a dream. It is not a projection of empty optimism. It is a gift from God that comes from far beyond us. Someone asked me some time back, "How do you know that Christmas story is true?" If I thought about it, I would have given them a half-scholarly answer, because I am half a scholar. But I wasn't even thinking about it, so I blurted it out and said, "Because none of us could have ever dreamed it up." It comes from somewhere else, a source far beyond us, from a divine heart that already knew what it meant to be broken and then mended. And it comes, ready or not. And for the moment, we glimpse the truth that our lives are in much better hands than we could ever have imagined. This is the true essence of our hope, our holy hope. It's quiet and it's subtle. And that leads many of us to fill the silences with our own words and the stillness with our own activity. But should we pause long enough to hear the flutter of an angel wing, or see the unusual star that we did not create, maybe we'll also hear the invitation to rejoice. Fact is, I don't need anybody to prove to me that the Messiah was born among peasants and placed in a feeding trough in the city of David. I know that's true. And you know how I know that's true? I've watched for years as people begin to cry in the shadows as we start to sing "Silent Night, Holy Night." All is calm, all is bright, and in the gift of such a moment, they know it's true too. So take a good look around. Watch for the hope. Note the disruption of the same old status quo. Listen for the cry of a child who reminds us of the vulnerability of the little baby Jesus. Take note in the next winter storm that that is really a sign of the power of God, who has the awesome power to create it and disrupt you. And take comfort in the company of good friends, all of whom have been given to you as a holy gift, so that you never have to travel the journey alone. And should someone interrupt your lingering darkness with a word of interrupting grace, be still, unlock your arms, and take it in as a holy gift from heaven. As Jesus the Messiah will say, "Fear not, little flock. It is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom.